1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one double five one. Wash your hands. And Joe at RT.ie. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for contact. You're a GP in Howth.
In Howth, in North
Dublin. So you're like all GPs. You've been, well, you're always running off your feet, but the last 15 months has been unbelievable. But you, that's not what you contacted us about. You contacted us about noise at night time.
That's right. I live opposite Colester compound in Clontarf, Colester, and been there for 5 years. And just so it was again an issue this week, you know, no notice. About 2 o'clock in the morning, woken up by JCBs and diggers, which work in, alongside the rail track. And that goes for, you know, until basically 5:30, 6 a.m. And we still haven't had any notice yet of how long this particular work is planned to be for. But in the past, it's been for a week, 2 weeks, you know, with maybe a few weeks in between. And at one point, it was actually for 3 solid months, six nights a week. The only nights that would never, ever happen is a Sunday night or a bank holiday Monday night.
And what are they doing?
They are moving. It's quite of a long, awkward lay-by, and they fill it with the hardcore that they use then to do kind of railway maintenance with. That's then, because it's a long one, they shovel the hardcore, which is delivered during the day, they shovel it from one end to the other, then onto a dumpster, and then from there that goes onto some form of, I guess, vehicle that's on the track that then goes to where they're actually doing the railway repair. But that, you know, from living there and being awake through this, those trains they're not particularly frequent through the night. It's more the JCBs shoveling the hardcore up and down that causes the noise. And obviously it's quite a solid.
And where is this yard again?
Colester. It's called Colester Compound. It's just off Collins Avenue, just before the Colester, between Howth Dart Station, Clontarf Dart Station and Colester Dart Station.
Okay, so there's road access to it, obviously.
Exactly, yes.
And they deliver, trucks deliver gravel or whatever they use to. Okay, and you sent us in audio. Well, it's a video. What time did you take this video at, so to speak, a recorder? Oh.
It would have been around, it was about 2:20, 2:21 a.m.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah, so that was Wednesday, or the early hours of Wednesday morning.
And you're saying this is constant, every six nights a week?
So, well, we don't know how long this episode is. It usually is a week at a time. But as I say, we haven't had any notice. They did say that they delivered by hand, but I haven't met anybody in the apartment block. That
cover your ears, Joanna. Here it comes again.
Normal. Yeah.
And where were you when this is done on your phone, was it, Joanna?
That's right. Yeah.
Where were you when you recorded this?
I was in my bedroom. That's probably
God.
Most people would be 2 a.m. in the morning.
I thought you were. You climbed over the wall and run 500 yards.
That was just from standing at my bedroom window.
That's at 2:30 this morning. 2:30 the previous morning, and goes on from what time to what time generally?
Generally around 2 o'clock, generally finishing about 5:30, 6.
Okay.
Before the train starts.
But surely, because we had this about a year ago, much further down near where the Luke Kelly statue is there in Sheriff Street, but they were working on the tracks. You're saying this is a depot?
This is a depot where they then transport it to where they are working on the tracks.
And who allows them to work? Building site has hours. The Children's Hospital has building site. The most important building site in the country had very limited hours and noise abatements. Who allows them to just walk non-stop willy-nilly?
There is a legislative, I think it's part of legislation that they're allowed to do rail works at any time. But I would argue that that's to actually work on the rail, and that's absolutely appropriate, but that would never be more than for, even if I imagine if you were replacing rail track, that really wouldn't take more than 1 week, and that wouldn't be, that would be, you know, I'd imagine rail track lasts presumably for, you know, good several years, if you like. And if you're just putting in a bit of hardcore, I don't think that'd be more than a night or two. It's because they have this ingress there, and that's, this is where they store their hardcore. And I just feel there must be a better site to do it. This, where this property is, was built in 2001, and it was just a playing field there. And but now, obviously, it's been repurposed for a really excellent high-density residential unit, which is what the city needs, of course. But they're just choosing to ignore that this is now a high density residential area and using this loophole
and
to
how,
do whatever
okay,
they want.
The gravel, the hardcore or whatever is being... But how do they load it? Is there a platform there for to load it onto the trains?
To be honest, that's further down. That's out of my line of vision. So I can't quite see that.
I've never, I'm forever in Colester. I've never heard of the Colester compound. Never heard of it.
It's just off the junction of Holt Road and Collins Avenue. Okay. Well-known tourist site.
Okay. And Joanna, have you raised it with Ian Rod Aaron?
Absolutely, yeah, from the beginning. Yeah.
And what do they say?
Well, the first time, when the first time was speaking with the previous incumbent in the customer service role, he said, did you not see it when you looked out the window when you were viewing the apartment to rent? And I said, well, I obviously saw the Dart, but, you know, Dart's finished at a reasonable time. And then I said, oh, are you saying these apartments are inhabitable? Like, I don't think it's particularly, you know, your home is where you want to sleep, you know?
Yeah.
No matter what you do, it's a huge part of your health, and I would certainly be a big believer in that. And he didn't reply to that. You know, so maybe if I hadn't taken it, but somebody else would have, but you don't have much choice in Dublin at the moment in terms of accommodation.
So the point that was made to you was it almost hard luck? Did you not see the railway when you were buying? But people don't expect. People don't expect a railway to be a building site.
No,
and
that's a fair point.
And have the sounds, have the sounds of a building site.
Yeah.
And reminding people this is 2:30 in the morning. And it started at 1:30 and goes on to 6:00 and worked, goes 6 nights a week up in that depot.
Can do, that's generally usually a week at a time.
Noise abatement, heavy curtains, earplugs, not that you should have to, but...
Well, like, we have really, you know, they're very heavyweight curtains of blackout. I have, my flatmate actually had, she had access to industrial, like, you know, factory level grade of earplugs, and they just really don't, they're very uncomfortable to wear. If you put them really right in properly, and you know, I've obviously been wearing them for 2 nights since that, and you still wake up with it.
That's just unbelievable. That
and all the door windows closed in this heat, but you're of course. So what else are you going to do? Yeah.
And we've tweeted a
video. We don't really suffer from heat normally.
Yeah, we've tweeted a video with the audio, obviously, on at Joe Liveline and at RTE Liveline. But Joanna, like, you're a medic, you're a GP on the front line. You know the damage that lack of sleep can do to people.
Yeah.
So can you move to the front of the apartment? Would that make a difference? I know you shouldn't have to. Can you move full stop?
Well, it's just, it's very hard to get apartments in Dublin, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And do other
I know other people have left. Certainly when I first moved in and it started happening, there was people who had left because of that reason. I'm just not in a position to myself.
Yeah. And were you advised when you were acquiring or renting the apartment or whatever that...
No.
And people, like, if you're living as close as you are, say, to a motorway, well, people would say, well, there could be, like, the M50 is noisy 24/7, but there's massive baffling on either side to reduce the noise for residents. Is there any hope of Inroad Air putting up baffling there?
Well, when they did the 3-month stint, they said they had used acoustic boards, but if you looked out, and I probably do have photos, I'm sure I do have photos of that, they just had plywood up and they just used that to pile the hardcore even higher.
And is there, like, I'd love to talk to somebody who knows railways, because all those railway lines all converge around the docks in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And now, as we discovered recently, docks are now a lot of apartment blocks, but still there are large swathes of railway crossings and interactions.
I totally agree.
Yep. In around the docks that have no one around them.
Yeah. In fact, I made that suggestion to them before, but they never replied on that.
So what can you do? They're totally... Well, can the ESB work in the middle of the night?
Post
work make noise in the middle of the night? Can a builder make noise in the middle of the night?
Not even roadworks. Roadworks have to have special permission and, you know, they have to make applications. Okay. And there have to be a lot of notifications and... Yeah. So we did contact a councillor but obviously no change because it's still happening. But that was, they were a local councillor, so they were aware of this, obviously. It's been ongoing many years.
Yeah. Okay, I know you've taken time out of your surgery to raise this issue. Maybe other people, by the way, is there noise during the day from the dart? Does the dart use its horn or whatever it has?
Occasionally coming up to the dart station, but that's not a toot of a horn, you know, that's
and
not
people,
really going to interrupt your
and
day.
People living by a railway line get used to it.
You just get used to it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah,
but that noise sounds absolutely inhuman, given its volume and its duration and its frequency every night. Okay. It's not a laughing matter, Joanna, especially everyone has important jobs, but given your job as a GP. Joanna, thanks for your service generally, but thanks and all GPs in the pandemic and beyond, but thanks for raising that issue. And if people have ideas about, even if we've asked Aaron Road Aaron for a statement, like what, legally they say they're sound, so to speak, pardon the pun.
Don't they say we are allowed?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Joanna,
thank you
stay
so much.
Safe. Thanks
really
indeed.
Appreciate it again.
Thanks for contacting.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Joe at rt.ie. 511. Jack Hogan. Jack, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What happened?
So I was bringing a skate leader. I was bringing a group of skates out to go pier jumping in Bray.
Yeah,
and when I was in the water to test out the ladder that we had set up, you know, just to test the height and everything. There was a big splash I heard down along the pier, a bit load of shouting, and I started swimming around to see what happened, and I saw some people throwing a life buoy in. A man had fallen off the seawall and he was clinging on the life buoy, he was getting battered by the waves against the thing, so I had to swim around and tow him in and perform a rescue.
Well done. So luckily you were in the water, luckily you could swim, luckily you've obviously done a rescue course.
Mm-hmm.
And when the life buoy was thrown in, could you grab it? Did you use it for assistance or did you need it?
So I didn't use, I had a buoyancy aid on me, which I then took off to give to the man as another thing of flotation. I've been in the Scouts 3 years and the Sea Scouts since I was about six, so I'm confident in the water.
Mm.
So I was able to give him the flotation, and then I look after myself, so I didn't need to grab the actual buoy itself.
Yeah, but it's still, I was in last weekend, it's still the first time this year. I'm not a sea swimmer by any stretch, but I thought it was very cold. Well, the shock of it, are you well used to the cold of the water at this time of year?
Well, I'm used to it. I was also I was in a decent wetsuit.
Good stuff.
Prepared, but yeah, like you're right about the cold. Like, the
and
guy
what about
was,
the poor man that was in shock. The sea?
He was not really in a good way. He came out like you said, it's cold this time of year still. So the cold had gotten him. I think he'd gotten a hit on the head. He swallowed water. So when he came out, he was strong enough to pull himself out. But he really didn't know what was going on. He was in shock. He wasn't okay. The paramedics took him away after that. So unfortunately, I don't know what happened after. But
hopefully he's okay. But you got him. Yeah. You got him. You swam over to him and you got him back to shore, and he was taken away. Well done. Well, you didn't hesitate.
I was in the water, and it was just very much like you have to act in that situation. You can't take time, as you don't have the time.
Exactly. So make, and Jack, do your scout troop look up to you even more than they used to look up to you as a hero?
There's definitely an amount of hero worship there, but also just the kind of, like, I think it really spurned a kind of awareness of the water safety that people need to know what they're doing and need to know the risks, which I think is a positive thing to come out of it, more so than a bit of respect for me.
Yeah, okay, that's the best thing to come out of it, as well as respect. Jack, were you, it's all serendipity. Were you due to bring the troop out that night?
No, I'm down the hour beforehand and I'd leave when that group started. It was totally serendipitous. I was out just because some of my mates were there and I wanted to go pier jumping as well. But yeah, like I was thinking afterwards, I very much couldn't have been there in another time. Yeah. Like,
well done.
Yeah.
Well done. How long have you been swimming?
I've been in the water most of my life, like I said.
You're a water baby.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Okay. But then, like, I did my lifeguard training. I only qualified as a lifeguard about three, four weeks ago. So it's really recent.
Well, that's great. Well done. Thank you. That's Jack Hogan, scout leader, heroic scout leader in Bray. Well done, Jack.
Thank you very much.
And they will look up to you. Aaron Foley. Aaron, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you keeping?
Good. You're a qualified lifeguard as well, but you want to warn us about another issue, and this time you say you were out for a swim in Clontarf and jet skis are, well, this weekend we'll see them out and it'll be like the M50 with jet skis out there. Tell us, why are they so dangerous, Aaron?
Well, I tell you, Joe, I've been a lifelong swimmer. I'm 50 years old and I just re-qualified as a lifeguard this year, so I'm fairly aware of what happens at sea.
Okay.
And if you play golf or anything like that, you'd know that you hit a ball in a fairway, you can't see it, and you almost get on top of it sometimes because it might be behind a small tuft of grass.
Mm-hmm.
But in the sea, the waves are, they hide things very easy, and swimmers are very difficult to see on the sea surface.
Okay.
But we're having a problem with, like, in Cork now, there's signs on all the jetties saying that jet skis should use the jetty. We all want everybody out to use the sea, but they should taxi out slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Into 200 metres offshore before they start doing their acrobatics, right? But we're finding there, last week we had a group of people down here and honest to God, they were doing it within metres of sea swimmers. Young children were in the water and they were doing this kind of, I don't know what you call it, showboating type thing, you know, where they'd be bouncing the boat around the place over waves and kind of but so close to swimmers that you'd actually be really frightened for their lives, you know. Now, we've seen them before lots of times down here. And many a time we've said to them, have they seen swimmers in the water? Because we know that they've come close to swimmers. And they have said they hadn't even seen the swimmers.
Of course you wouldn't. How would you see the water can be grey, stroke blue, stroke turquoise, stroke black. How would you spot a grey head or a dark haired person swimming?
Oh, absolutely. I've got fellas here, basically. We're quite an older group here. We've got a few grey haired fellas here in the water with us. And I tell you, I'd find it difficult to see them standing on a pier looking down into the water. You'd still have difficulty seeing with them. So it's a bit of an issue, you know. But it's actually been tackled a little bit by the council. There's a question being put up by Captain Stoker this weekend about the issue. But they say that they shouldn't be tackling what's happening on the sea, right?
Yeah.
No, nobody seems to have any actual powers at sea. The Gardaí, their powers stop at the edge of the water.
Okay.
These guys are going in doing this stuff. Look, anybody can buy a license. If I wanted to get a powerboat, I'd have to do a powerboat license. But to get a jet ski, I just have to have a few quid in my pocket.
Oh, I think you'd need no validated or verified training.
No.
There's no verified or validated exam.
No. And if you go down to any of the Mediterranean countries or Germany, you go off the coast of basically Denmark, anywhere else, they have to taxi out. There's a lane made for them, so they're completely segregated from the swimmers. Because we've seen it. You know, Shane McGowan's partner got hit by one years ago, God rest her. And we know that these things happen on a frequent basis, you know. But I'm afraid they're going to wait till an accident happens before they do something. Now, like I said, every jetty in Cork has a sign for jet skis. So we're only asking that they should.
You're thinking of Kirsty McCall?
Kirsty, yeah.
Yes, well, yeah, his singing partner. Yeah, she was killed in, I think it was the Gulf of Mexico or whatever. I thought that was a boat or whatever, but still it was horrific. You have an incredible phrase here. You say, it's akin letting jet skis fly around beaches and where the... especially on the good weather that's expected, is akin to getting on a motorbike and flying around a playground.
Well, I don't see the difference. These guys, listen, Joe, I know it sounds terrible because I don't want to stereotype people, right?
Yeah, I know.
But they came down the other day, right? We asked them very gently because they were at a buoy that was, like, we know where they were swimming to. This buoy is 20, 30 metres offshore. Mm-hmm. And they were doing, like, going around this thing. Like I said, there was young children in the water, and they came within metres of them. Because you can see they leave a bubble trail behind the boat, so you can know exactly where they've been, so you can see clearly.
Okay.
I said, lads, do you mind moving away? And listen, there's an awful, I know I shouldn't say it, but there was an awful bang of marijuana off them, you know what I mean? And they were actually getting cars with kids, and the young kids getting the cars, it's school time, kids should have been in school, but basically, the smoke's spilling out of the yokes. They're driving around like, basically, lunatics, you know? Seriously, yeah. I just feel... We're going to have a major.
Yeah, but it's different. I take your analogy. It's a powerful analogy. These jet skis and busy beaches and children in swimming is akin to someone on a motorbike flying around a children's playground. But the difference is, if you ring the Gardaí and tell them there's someone on a motorbike driving around the kids, they'd be up in jig time.
Yeah.
And they'd arrest whoever was there or apprehend them. But you're saying there's no jurisdiction, no legal jurisdiction, no policing jurisdiction.
As far as I can see, in Fingal County Council have basically bylaws, right? Okay, but nobody seems to have any basically powers to enforce. And basically, South Dublin County has bylaws, right?
Right.
But I believe they're having difficulties over there too. I've heard people in Sandy Cove saying the same things I'm saying here. I know a good few people that swim regularly year round, and we'd all keep in touch with each other, and they're having the same difficulties. But there doesn't seem to be anything for North County Dublin, right, Joe? We are facing into a summer with a lot of people coming onto the beach. We know this is happening, right? And there's an awful lot of risk that we're basically facing into here. Like, we've got a huge issue. Like, I've been a lifeguard most of my life. I've started to see all my life. And I think we're making some very basic mistakes. Like, our lifeguard services, and I don't want to diverge, but I will just for the moment, if I can indulge it. Our lifeguard services basically run like an office. Right, we operate from 7:30 till 6:30 at night time. But if the bus, if the tide is in 8 in the morning, there could be 1,000 swimmers in Dublin Bay, right? And there could be 1,000 in again at 8:20 that night. And the sea isn't an office. It's not a 9-to-5 thing. It comes in when it comes in, and it goes out when it goes out. We're not even covering them signs with our lifeguard schedules. So I think we're facing into a summer where we're going to see basically kind of incidents that could have been avoided had we basically faced into kind of reality and gone, right, we need lifeguards there when the tide is in. Sure, you know yourself, Dolly Mount, you live down here in Clontarf. Yeah. Your life, basically, you know the tide's out. There's no basic need for a lifeguard.
No, not at all.
So we need to really shake up the system, you know?
I didn't know that. The lifeguard system is 9-to-5.
It's 11:30 till 6:30.
It's working day office hours.
But it's a fixed time.
And if the tide is in these mornings, Clontarf is like Grafton Street, or the Bull Wall is like Grafton Street.
You know,
when Grafton Street used to be Grafton Street and busy.
Yeah. Like, I'd love to basically see it basically run the service, run the way. Because there's plenty of characters my age, right, who can swim and really are competent, right? And we would volunteer time to a service if we could even basically improve it, you know? And I actually did my own lifeguard renewal this year. You know, it cost me £450. I did it because I feel responsible for the people that are there. Nobody wants to see somebody get hurt, you know? But basically, we have to find a way where we're going to basically try and do some kind of safeguarding. We tripled the number of people down here this year that we had in previous year. We were only looking at... The city council have only actually put on the same number of lifeguards we've had for the last 10 years. 10 people.
Now, lifeguards end up doing little medical emergencies as well, don't you? Cuts and bruises. Well, they come to you anyway. I don't know whether you're allowed to do it, but...
You do compression bandaging and various things like that. You're not a medical trained person, you know, but you're obviously there for cuts and bruises and basically.
And it's a place to wait until an ambulance arrives if one is needed, God forbid.
Of course.
Yeah, the lifeguard station.
It's a great service.
Yeah, but as you say, we're told this summer is going to be outdoors. The sun comes up at 5:30 now, and you're saying it's 6 hours before a lifeguard would arrive on a busy beach, and then they're gone at 6:30. Now, Aaron, the other problem I've heard down on the Bull Wall, it's not your issue. I heard it this morning that one of the swimmers picked up Vial's disease, which comes from rat's urine.
I'm pretty aware what Vial's disease is.
Yeah, but he's
I'm very shocked, actually.
He's not well.
That's a shocker.
He's in hospital with it, yeah. The number of rats on the... Because people are leaving the rubbish and the number of rats has expanded dramatically, and you can't do anything to control rats on that site because it's protected, rightly so. And who was saying to us last week, Niall Hatch, that the only deterrent to rats on the Bull Wall are seagulls, believe it or not. But anyway, it's just encouraging people to be really careful. If you have a cut and you get in swimming and you just be really careful if you have cuts and you're getting or walking down where rodents might be. Okay, Aaron Fowler. Let's say Aaron, here's Jason. Joe at rt.ie, 1850 715 815. Jason.
Yes, hi Joe.
Jet ski.
Thanks for taking my call.
Jet skis
and jet scooters. Just, I wanted to clarify. There's two different types. There's the jet scooter, which is basically like a motorcycle. You could just jump on, hook it on, start it up, and off you go. A jet ski has got a different situation where you have to stand at the back. You need a fair amount of skill to use them, and you need to lift up the front of the machine to get it going. The difficulty with jet scooters is that, as I said, anybody can drive them. They also, the majority of them, wouldn't have a neutral. So there's really no way to stop them other than pulling the kill cord. A lot of people don't know that, and as I said to you, they tend to attract people who have no background in water sports whatsoever. And therefore, as the gentleman rightly previously said, they tend to just abuse them. I've seen accidents where people have hit stumps on the water, etc., and been killed outright with jet scooters. They're 700cc, they're 1200cc, they're massively powerful boat machines. They were designed for rescue and surf and in reef areas. I've used them myself as security boats, and they're very useful for that reason. But generally, for flying up and down the coast, they really are a nuisance. They need to be patrolled properly, and I think there is legislation in Ireland regarding jet scooters already, and you'll find a lot of areas where they'd just be banned, I know, in around marinas, etc.
And then the jet ski...
The jet ski is
now, do they look different, Jason?
They look different as well, okay. The jet ski is sort of narrower, and she'd have the front on it would actually, you'd have to raise up the front to get her going. And same sort of throttle situation, but you're actually standing at the back of it, balancing. And they're used for tricks, they're speedy machines as well, but you'd need a fair amount of skill to use them. Whereas the jet scooter is really, you can put anyone on it. It's a trigger which accelerates the vessel over the water. And as I said, you should be wearing a kill cord, which basically, if you fall off the jet scooter, it pulls as you fall off,
and it dies.
It kills the engine.
And how much is a jet ski? Do you know, Jason, how much is a jet scooter?
$6,000 to $10,000. $6,000 to $10,000. I mean, you can get them cheaper, obviously.
But how much is that for a jet scooter or a jet ski?
That's a jet scooter, yeah. Jet ski would be... I'm not too sure about the jet ski, the prices these days.
And the jet skis...
They are different machines.
But the jet ski is much more powerful.
Jet ski is not as powerful as a jet scooter.
Then I'm totally confused now. Why? Because I'm thinking of the word scooter.
Yeah,
meaning
scooter,
slow and...
No, it's just that they're called scooters because the way you sit on them, they're more like a motorcycle versus a jet ski. You're actually sitting standing on it like a ski in many senses. Yeah, it's something between your feet. A lot of people starting off, they'll be lying in the water to get them going, etc.
Okay,
so your jet scooter is sort of anybody can jump on. You know,
for the ski or the scooter, do you need any training?
Personal water safety craft, I think they're called now. And yes, it's always advisable, but I don't think it's enforced.
It's not obligatory. Is it mandatory?
It's not mandatory over here, as far as I'm aware. But again, I could be correct on that. The ISA would be the people to approach on that.
Have you noticed an increase in the number of these vehicles on the waves?
Of course, of course.
And the lockdown.
And again, with the staycation, people are buying things to get on the water quickly for their 2 weeks vacation, etc. I mean, ostensibly, that the machines have a purpose. It's just they're being misused. So, as that gentleman said previously, it's like putting a motorcycle inside a playground. It is, in many senses, except a motorcycle, you can put in neutral and have it stopped. And if you fall off it, it'll drop dead. A jet scooter potentially has the risk, if you're not wearing a kill cord on it, can just keep on travelling.
Mother of divine.
Yeah. And if you have a 700cc or a 1200cc Yamaha engine under
it. Which is a motorbike.
It's a motorbike, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And a high-powered one, you know.
Yeah,
and they don't have a propeller. They have they're jet scooters, so they push out water through a series of tubes at the back of the boat. So in that sense, they're safer. But if something that heavy hits you, you know, it doesn't matter if there's a plop or not on it. Yeah. You're still going to get some serious damage.
You sure are. Stay there, Jason, please. Pat Gaynor, a sea swimmer all year round. Have you noticed an increase in the number of jet skis and jet scooters? And
Joe, I have in the past. I could write a book about jet skis and swimmers and use of the jet skis and near beaches and launching points. I have noticed a big increase, and particularly last year and this year, if any sort of good weather, they'll be out. Now, there's a number who are responsible, but there's an awful lot who are just irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what I've noticed. It seems to be on a good day when the weather conditions are beautiful, they seem to want to go where the crowd is at the beaches and where people are swimming. And they're going to they're launching, say, at a slipway, and then they'll go to a beach and they'll swap around and they'll let their family onto it. I've seen parents letting their children onto it, going onto the beach, and there's other swimmers there. And
crazy, dangerously crazy.
Joe, I have had to walk away because
your nerves are going looking to see
nerves. And I'll give you one example there. A couple of weeks ago, we were swimming. There was a group of us. We have all the floats. The orange float swimming, and we came across jet ski coming into a beach. I spoke to him because I was ahead, and I said, look, there's about 20 swimmers coming behind me now, so what did they do? This is all grand, we're aware of it, but not out and back in, and within about 10 feet of one of the swimmers, it was quite wavy, they didn't see the swimmer and just missed them. But it's not only about swimmers, it's about kids on the beach.
Yeah.
They're coming into the beaches to change drivers and then putting children on them as well. And they're tearing up and down, and they're not. They were within 20, 30 feet.
Did you ever see, again, it's a grey area. Who polices this?
Well, Joe, I've had this. It's the Maritime Safety Act 2005. The council can make regulations barring and policing of jet skis, but there's provisions in that act that prevent personal watercraft with their jet skis from behaving unreasonably where there's other water users or even people on the beach where they are interfering with their enjoyment of it.
Okay.
And there's powers there for the guards to go down, demand name and addresses, and they can even seize the jet skis under the Maritime Safety Act, if it's serious enough, under various sections of it. Section 10 is one of them, and on from there, and there's fines, prosecutions can be taken, but it is difficult to police because they're in the jet ski, they're out in the sea, the guards arrive, so they just go off to where they have launched. And jet skis, there is a large group, a jet ski society in Ireland.
Is that okay?
The people who are in that are very responsible, but they're not the ones who are going up and down the beach and where swimmers are. And I've seen it too much. There's going to be someone.
And where do you swim, Pat?
In Buncrana, mainly Buncrana, Loddon, Inishowen, anywhere along there. Lough Swilly.
But that's what part of where's that accent from? It's not Donegal.
No, it's the same town as you, Joe.
Oh, you're from the Donegal end of Ballyfermot.
I'm from the Donegal end of Ballyfermot.
Yeah, okay.
You were brought up in the posh part. I'm
in the
Porch's
Head now. We were glad to
I'm down
it.
The lower end.
Okay, fair play to you, Pat. Brilliant to be able to swim every day. Alan in Eden Derry, you're listening. jet skis and jet scooters and out of control, and there's a lot more than because of staycations, as Jason pointed out. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, Joe. Actually, it's Screen County Mead, but anyway, okay. Not worry, that's neither here nor there. Police unit, marine unit. I lived in Canada, and that's what they had to police the waterways. And people drinking on the boats, you weren't allowed to drink on a boat. And jet skis, etc., etc. And if you disrespected people and you broke rules and regulations which are set out, they confiscated your jet ski. So, and the same goes for alcohol and boats.
I didn't know
allowed to have alcohol drinking boats when you're on a lake or anything like that. They'll confiscate your boat. Simple.
Okay. Now, have the police got jet skis in Canada? Do you follow me?
I can't remember, but I do know they have launches and they're out about. And a marine unit is the answer. You've got Dublin Bay from Greystone.
Oh,
Nelwyn.
Incredible bay. One of the most incredible bays in the world on a city.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So,
Sydney Harbour.
Would it be an ideal to have police and jet skis? Yes. And stick it to them.
I know. I've seen a boat, I think, on the Shannon, a Garda boat on the Shannon. I've seen the underwater rescue operation. That's incredible. But they're doing a completely different and really important job.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Jason, by the way, can you get on a jet ski at night time in darkness? Are there lights on them?
No, they don't have any navigation lights on them.
Do they have a headlight on them?
They've no headlight on them. They've no form of navigation lights whatsoever.
Okay.
So they really are just a day usage. As I said, they were designed originally to rescue surfers and to bring surfers into big waves. They've been appropriated by the general community as a sort of a fun go-to machine. They just do not mix with other water users, and that's full stop. They should be allocated spaces offshore.
Yeah,
but again,
point,
the nature of this is that people are jumping on. They want to be seen driving them. They want to show off to the girls.
Yeah,
they want to show off to their friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And we all know who the type of person. And that's fair enough,
but
they just do not. They do not mix with other water users.
Jet skis.
Someone swimming, they can't be seen.
Listeners pointing out that in the various websites for buying and selling, a jet ski is for sale up north for £8,000, and a jet ski is for sale in Tipperary for €15,000.
Yeah, it depends on the engine size.
They're an expensive bit of kit, aren't they?
Yeah, you can get the cheaper versions, but if you get a Yamaha or a Sea-Doo, the various different brands, obviously they're more expensive.
Okay, Jason, Jason Grimald, good Pat Gaynor, thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
And Alan in County Meath. 5 on 551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. We have a statement in from Irish Rail about that noise. I've got that noise again, Jamie, on the cart wall. This is going on every night. You may have seen the video. It's on Twitter at Joe Liveline and at RTE Liveline. Just, this is going on from 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock, six nights a week. Joanne, who's a GP, and that is recorded from her bedroom. He's shouting over it. Now, that's not a building site. That's a yard in Colester called the Colester Compound. And it's right beside the railway line, and they store hardcore. So there's diggers there. Dumpers and diggers, and they're lifting and dropping the hardcore into, obviously, bogies to be brought up and down the railway line for maintenance, because you have to keep replenishing the gravel on the railway line. Irish Rail have announced saying, we apologise to Dr. Joanna. We're currently carrying out track renewals between Howth and Colester. Now, Joanna says it's been going on for a long, long time, including at 1.3 months every single night. Which is essential for the safe running of the railway. The current works commence on the 8th of June and will be completed on the 17th of June, the day after Bloomsday. Leaflets were dropped to residents in the closest proximity, and there's a website, etc. Colester Compound is rarely used at night due to its close proximity to residential areas. But in this instance, because of its nearness to the maintenance works, it was used. And they add, which is helpful, plans are currently underway to construct noise attenuation barriers around the compound. Well, I think that would help. Now, is that any relief to Joanna, who's a GP, and all the people living so close? As I say, that recording is from her bedroom. That she says is going to finish next Thursday, isn't it, the 17th? Philomena Rabbit. Philomena is in Galway, in Athenry, and a fantastic name, well-known Galway name, but it's a different species you have the problem with. Philomena Rabbit has a problem with bees. What's the problem, Philomena?
Well, the problem is, Joe, I've sent on photographs. Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on the
fair play.
Program.
Yeah.
And they arrived in spring 2018, and we didn't really notice them, I suppose, until the July or August.
Okay.
And since then, I have had two people look at them that are beekeepers, and one of them said that a part of the roof would have to be removed, and it would cost me like 2,500 to 3,000.
Wow.
To get them. But the house, you know, there's the board, the aero board was in it, and then a number of years, it was built in 2016, and a number of years later, we got the beading pumped into the cavity block.
Mm-hmm.
So what the beekeeper, one of them said to me, that they've got into the fascia.
Okay.
And now I got my son to get me a hand smoker because we have the third level in the house, which is like an office, an attic.
Okay.
And there's a little hole.
But can I ask you, Philomena, what harm are they doing?
Yeah, you see, this is what I want to know. Like, can they harm? I'd be just afraid that they would, come down through the ceiling, the honey, or can it harm?
And, don't disturb them now. You know that. Try not.
Oh, I know that. Yes, yeah. But I was just checking with the hand smoker. There's a little opening where a light fit in the scope.
Mm-hmm.
And I put some pine leaves and that into it. And I put up and I pressed the bellow thing, smoke, to put the smoke up there. And it did disturb them. They got a bit agitated. So they actually have come in, you know, to the attic area, to the ceiling above the attic. And I'm just, you know, would like to get them moved. But if they're not going to do any harm to the house or us, because they are very placid, they would, you know, they wouldn't, they're not, let's say, you know, they wouldn't be cross.
Well, unless they think the queen bee is in danger and the worker bees will protect her.
Yeah.
And I know wasps swarm and bees swarm.
Yes.
And it can be extraordinarily dangerous.
Yes, yes. But I just
you're looking for, is there any beekeepers out there, anyone who have an idea? You want to, and by the way, if you smoke them out, are you killing them?
No. They came out, a lot of them came out of the hive, and they just lay on the wall up out, you know, when we had the smoker outside. And then just once the smoke stopped, they just did back about their business again. No, it doesn't harm them. No. But
okay.
They did, a lot of them. And one of the guys that came, a beekeeper last summer, he said, there's thousands, because he knew by the amount of bees that was lying out on the wall waiting to get into the nest. And he said, you have 5,000 or 6,000 bees there.
Yeah.
So it's a big nest.
And how long has it been there?
2018.
Yeah, you said that. Okay.
3 years.
Yeah. And have you asked around, like, have you...
Yes, but as I said, that's the one that I got. The beekeeper said to me, if the roof would have to be lifted around the area, and then every bit of honey would have to be taken out of there because they go back in again. But I just thought if you could get them out and then just kind of spray foam the area, they wouldn't go back in again.
You'd block it up effectively.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, Philomena, stay with us. I'll come back to you after this break. Joe at rt.ie.
Okay.
511 for more chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Philomena Rabbit has a beehive in her, the eaves, or in, inside her roof, and she's been quoted thousands to move, to lift the roof, to remove them. David Kelly's a beekeeper. Any ideas, David?
I have, Joe. Okay. The best thing you can do, Joe, really, is to contact a company called swarms.ie.
Swans.
Swarms, S-W-A-R-M-S.
Swarms, sorry, swarms. Yeah, my fault. Yeah.
And the reason I say that, Joe, is because they would have local beekeepers. Okay. This lady is in Galway, is that correct?
Yeah, Athenry.
Yeah, they would have local beekeepers who could deal with it there. Mm-hmm. And that way, the bees that are taken from her attic could be confined to more or less the Galway area. They can be tested to make sure there's no transmission of diseases.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
And can they? Okay. Is it easy to access where they are, Philomena?
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay, brilliant. Okay. So a beekeeper, and what would the beekeeper do with the beehive, David?
We've quite a few very reputable females doing it now. But what they would do is they would take the comb from the attic with the bees, and once they have the queen, all other bees will follow into that box.
Wow.
It's
But David, is the beehive in Philomena's attic, so to speak, doing any harm?
The only possibility, it may stain the ceiling coming into the...
With the honey. Okay. So, swarm.ie, okay.
Sorry, I didn't get his first
That's
name.
That's David. David Kelly.
David, sorry. If you, you know, I can get scaffolding put up at, because it's a two-story house, you know, and if a beekeeper came and put a hive up there, would it lure the bees into it?
He could put up what's called a bait hive.
Yes.
And put some old frame into it, but you will only draw out the swarm, which will be the old queen and 60% of the bees that are in the hive at the moment. She will leave a queen cell, which will hatch. That queen will go off and get mated and come back to the remaining 40%, and the whole thing starts all over again.
All over again. Yeah.
Okay. But if you want them out of your attic completely, the best thing to do is to get onto swarms.ie, who will have the number
swarms.ie, okay. And David, when it's the time of year now where we would see bees swarming, won't we?
Yeah, well, I got one yesterday, Joe. I was in... I have a little group called Sea Bees.
Okay.
They're in Selbyshire. It's about all bees. It's about Irish black honeybees and bumblebees and solitary bees and whatever. And we meet in the Acre Project in Selbyshire every second Thursday. But it's just to keep familiarise people with stuff. But what happens is you will get people who will say, well, there's a swarm in my garden. Inevitably turns out to be wasps. nine times out of ten. But we don't mind going to these and just kind of letting people
but
know.
But are swarms, when you see a swarm, be it wasps or bees, is it dangerous in itself?
No, it's not, Joe, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's far less dangerous to approach a swarm, even though we don't recommend it. It's far less dangerous to be around a swarm than it is a hive. Because a hive, the bees are basically protecting their home.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
A swarm is just where it landed until they're trying to set up somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's not a serious danger.
Okay. But Steve, I'll just let you listen to Steve Gallagher, who's from, you run swarms.ie.
Yeah, it's like a call centre. How you doing, Joe?
How you doing? Go ahead. You have a large network of beekeepers.
The largest national network in the world, as far as I understand.
Okay, and how did you come to set this up, Steve?
Necessity. There's 75 associations in the country. I was working for Norkilair a couple of years ago, and I discovered that people had a very difficult time finding somebody to help them with this. So needed an idea that was a single idea where they could very easily find one place that could help. So that's basically what started it off.
Andy, could you help Philomena, do you think? I know it's only over.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, great.
And
you can move the bees, but you don't kill them, do you?
No. 99% of the time, there's no need to kill the bees.
Okay, and what's the 1%?
It's okay, if they're listed buildings, if they're in like an eight-story take, it depends on the situation.
Yeah. And is Swarms.ie a company, Steve? Is this your livelihood?
It's not a company, no. I do order bits and blobs with honeybees and stuff. This is just something that just really took off. Okay, it's kind of like a charity, sort of.
Well done, you.
Well, in fairness, it's the guys who go, like Dave.
Yeah, of course.
Kelly,
you're the network.
I'm just the call.
Yeah.
I'm just the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And David, bees are dying out. Are they overall, or that's what we hear?
Their numbers are depleting. All right, Joe. Yeah.
And what can everyone do?
Stephen Ander. He phoned me yesterday. Okay. In connection to a swarm, and it's been nicely rehomed in a...
Okay, well done. What can people do, even with a small patch, to help bees?
Don't cut your lawn as often as you do.
Okay, don't cut your lawn as often, yeah. That's good advice. Yeah, I'll write that down. Yeah, that's great.
Dandelions are good.
They're good, yeah.
When bees come out of their hives, that's the snowdrop and dandelion are the first two things that they kind of really rely on. To build themselves back up.
Okay, so snowdrops, dandelions, and leave the lawnmower under the stairs or in the shed or whatever. Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, ask David or Stephen, did I do any damage to them by having the smoker on, a couple of days? No.
No.
That's good.
Okay, you're an innocent woman, Philomena. But they are, they really are one of nature's great creatures.
Yeah.
Thanks, Philomena Rabbit. Thanks, David Kelly. And above all, Stephen Gallagher for setting up swarms.ie. And apparently there's also findyourkeeper.ie. Thank you all. Sister Fikra Nutty. Sister Fikra, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And where are you at the moment?
I'm in St. Mary's Abbey, Glencairn, just outside Lismore in West Waterford.
Which is an enclosed Cistercian order.
It is indeed.
And how has the pandemic almost made your work redundant?
Well, it's made some of our work redundant.
Okay.
Our primary work here, Joe, is prayer.
Right? Yeah, of course.
So that's the first thing to be said, because we actually go to church 7 times a day, starting off at 4:10 in the morning.
Right.
Okay. But our actual manual work that we engage in, we have a three-way split here in our monastery.
Okay.
We have Eucharist bread, we have a card department, and we have a farm.
Okay, and which one were you working in, Sister?
Well, up to September of last year, I was working in Eucharist bread.
Okay, making the Eucharist for the sacrament, for the Mass.
Exactly, but you can imagine what happened during the pandemic.
Of course.
You know, it was like the guillotine dropped and what had been a very successful business, which was thriving, doing really well, just stopped.
And how do you make the Eucharist?
Right. We start off with a flour that is actually produced in this country specifically for the process. It is so fine, Joe, you wouldn't want to sneeze, right?
Okay.
Because you destroy yourself.
And what's that flour called, Sister?
And it's ultra bread flour. It's really, really fine.
Okay.
It's like talcum powder. Okay.
Yeah.
And to that, we only add one other ingredient, and that is our own spring water.
And you just mix it and mix it and mix it.
And we mix it together and we make it into a batter, which is for all the world like pancake batter, only thinner.
Yeah.
And then we bake it on a very specialist machine so that it comes out in A4 size sheets, if you know what an A4 sheet of paper would look like.
Yeah.
So it'd be like that, only flat. Right?
Yeah.
And when we have that done, it's very crisp. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So we stack it up in cupboards until we're ready for it, and then we humidify it to make it damp.
Yeah.
Then again, we stack it again, and at that point, we use a specialist cutting machine, which drives a core down through the stack, cutting out a specific diameter of bread. So we finish up with discs.
And when you push this drill down through the stack of A4 wafers.
Yeah.
Are there different sizes of Eucharist?
There certainly are. We do five sizes here. We have what we call the people's host, which is 3 centimetre size, which people around the country will be very, very familiar with receiving in the hand at communion.
Yeah.
And then we have the standard priest's host, which is 7 centimetres in diameter.
Okay.
Then we do what we call the cannon, which is 9 centimetres.
Okay, okay.
We have a bishop at 12 centimetres, and we have a cardinal at 15 centimetres.
That's
not
brilliant.
We've not yet got around to making a pope.
Oh, that's fantastic. Five of them. People, priest, canon, bishop, cardinal.
That's it. And we also make them in white and brown.
And gluten-free, I presume.
No, we don't do gluten-free.
Oh, do you not? No.
And there's a very simple reason for that. And that is that by canon law, it has to, the bread that's consecrated at the altar must have a percentage of wheat.
Okay.
So we can't produce a gluten-free host.
That's interesting.
And be in conformity with canon law. Now, there are good gluten-free hosts out there, and I'm not trying to cause trouble with anybody.
No, don't, right? Peter, don't.
But under canon law, they're not supposed to be consecrated. Yeah.
Okay, because wheat and its biblical connections. And,
exactly. Yeah. And that if you have a problem with gluten, you should really be receiving from the chalice.
Yeah,
now,
but
this
I can
was
see,
how it was pre-COVID, and I know that at the moment we can't receive from the chalice. So there's an issue there, and I don't know quite what the current ruling in the country is on that one.
But I can see the headline in one of the papers, all of the papers, tomorrow after that revelation by Sister Fiacre Nutty of Dungarvan, the Cistercian St. Mary's Abbey.
Glencairn.
Okay. Well, the headline tomorrow will be Catholic Church discriminating against celiac community. Shocker. Sister Fiacre Nutty reveals all.
No. But Sister Fiacre isn't revealing anything that hasn't been on the books since Vatican II.
Okay.
And Vatican II.
So off goes you sell them, I presume. You have to feed yourselves.
We were selling them by the ton, literally.
And how many would you have made of a good year? Say a papal year.
Something in the region of about three million.
Wow.
Something like that. And, you know, we would have been supplying places that would, in turn, like cathedral shops that would have passed them on to, you know, the priests within their diocese and that kind of thing.
But you have to get paid, don't you?
You
have to buy the flour.
We do. We do.
And everything else that goes, the machinery and all that carry on.
No, it was a good business.
So the bottom was falling out of that market.
Completely. I mean, literally, we were down to supplying priests and bishops and so on who were saying Mass privately, you know, since the onset of COVID.
What do you think? Sister Fiacre, of the prospect of people going back, even post-pandemic, hopefully, to receiving?
Well, you know, we're very hopeful, Joe, for the simple reason that we have never in our lives sold so many Mass cards, which proves to us that people out there are hungering for Mass.
But does it not tell you there's more people dying?
Well, there's that too, but there's an awful lot of people who were coming to the Abbey and asking us to supply them with signed Mass cards. They have relatives who have cancer, all sorts of other things, even outside COVID, you know.
Yeah.
So the greatest gift you can give anybody when they are in extremis, really, is the gift of the Mass. Right. Yeah.
And Sister Fiacre, like, where were you reassigned to, and did your union object?
Well, believe it or not, Joe, I just walked across the courtyard because on the opposite side of the courtyard to the Eucharist bread department is the card department. So that's where I am now. I'm working in cards.
And what are you doing? You're painting or...
So what we do is we produce Mass cards, we produce greeting cards, we produce memoriam cards.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's been a big increase in that, sadly.
They're the memoriam cards with a person's photograph and...
Do
them? Great.
Yeah, we do all those.
But you're very entrepreneurial, very enterprising.
Well, one needs to be because the Cistercian ethic is that we live by the work of our own hands. We don't go out looking for alms. We try to support ourselves and also to garner a little bit that we can assist other people. So we give away X amount every year to people in need. Yeah.
Well done. And you're in enclosed. How long have you been... Can I ask?
I'm 16 years here now, Joe.
16 years. And your surname is Nutty. Where's that from?
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah, Sister Nutty makes the bread.
All I can tell you about that is that I'm, as far as I know, the only Nutty nun in the country.
Okay.
And if you meet another Nutty, it's guaranteed to be a relative.
And whereabouts are you from originally?
Malahide.
Okay. And like, when did you find your vocation?
That's a very long story, Joe.
Okay, you know me.
But suffice to say that I started in the horticultural industry.
Yeah.
Myself and my brother ran a very successful garden centre in Malahide for 23 years.
Wow.
We sold that in the late 90s.
Okay.
And at that point, I went to England to do a degree in horticulture because I had always wanted to do a degree, but I had left school at 16 with my leaving cert and gone straight into the business.
Okay.
So I'd never had an opportunity to do a degree. So I went to England and I had the most fabulous 7 years over there, visiting all gardens of all shapes, makes and kinds, National Trust, the whole lot, and completing my degree over there. And it was really while there that the Lord got a hold on me.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It was quite the journey.
And you have a working farm?
We do. We do.
And you heat the monastery on the biofuel you grow.
We do. We grow elephant grass and we burn it in a specialised boiler.
And Sister Faker, can people visit the convent?
Well, they can.
But can I come in and see the gardens? Or?
Well, no.
Okay.
We have 200 acres here, Joe. We're absolutely blessed with our environment. We're on the banks of the River Blackwater.
Yeah.
And an amount of that space is available for people to walk, no problem. And we have a very small guest house here as well, which primarily is used by retreatants, people who want to come and spend 3 or 4 days here with us. And they're welcome to attend our office in the church. We go to church 7 times a day.
Your sense. Beginning at 10:04 in the morning.
Beginning at 10:04. God, you're nearly
up as early as the Ian Road Aaron fella's making all the noise up in Colester.
That's right. That's right.
So 10:04.
It's a lot quieter here.
I'd say it is, thankfully. So 4:10, how long does that service last for?
That lasts an hour, and then we have 20 minutes quiet prayer after it. So, you know, as
ten
past
four,
time.
4:10, we're now up to 5:30.
Yeah, and then we have breakfast.
Which consists of?
Oh, just as you would have breakfast at home. Porridge or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. 5:30, so what time do we finish breakfast at?
Well, that's depending on how greedy you are, I suppose.
Okay, there's no greedy non-stop.
Not at all, no.
So 5:30, and then are you back into church then at 6?
No, we go to do our scripture reading at that point.
Okay.
So we do that up until 7:45.
Yeah.
And 7:45 is our second office, which lasts 30 minutes.
Right.
Immediately after which we have Mass, and that brings us up to 9:00.
Yeah.
And we have a cup of tea.
Thank God.
Yeah, you need it then.
Yeah.
Then we go back into church for a very short office, which only lasts about 10-12 minutes.
Okay.
And then we have chapter every day, which is the occasion when if there's matters to be discussed or the abbot wants to make announcements, and that lasts maybe 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
And then we go to work.
Yeah, doing your bread or your greeting cards at the farm or whatever.
Yeah, so that starts at 10:30. So, like, we've been up since 10 to 4, but we're only getting to work at 10:30.
Okay, so 10:30 work. What time, little light lunch, I suspect? What time do you have lunch at?
Well, first of all, we go back to church, and we have another 12-minute office, and then we have lunch at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
So that's 1 to 1:30.
Yeah.
And then we have the joy of a siesta. We're allowed to go to bed for an hour if we'd like.
Yes.
But many of us choose instead to go walking in the grounds down by the river or whatever.
Okay.
And then we're back into church for another 12 minutes.
So what time are we at now, Sister Phoebe?
So now we're at 2:45.
Well, it is actually quite... It's just going to stay there. I'm wrecked with this. I'm up since 4:10. I know
on.
You're
not.
Come back.
Yet.
Well, I'm taking a quick break for a cup of tea. Stay with us.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
I'm talking to Sister Fiacre Nutty. She's in St. Mary's Abbey and enclosed the Cistercian Order at Glencairn Abbey in Waterford. Sister Fiacre was making the host for the Eucharist, making $3 million a year in 5 different sizes. But as she said, the bottom has completely fallen out of that market. So she's moved to another part of the convent and she's making greeting cards. And they also have a farm. So we're at 2:50 now in the afternoon. You've been up 11 hours at that stage. What's next, Sister?
Well, we have another 12, 15 minute office just coming up to 3 o'clock, Joe.
Yeah.
And after that, we go back to work. And we continue working until about 5:15.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we have our supper before we go to church for Vespers at 6 o'clock.
Right.
And that lasts a half an hour.
Yeah.
And we have 15 minutes quiet prayer meditation.
Yeah.
We have a 40-minute break.
Yeah.
We have the office of Compline. And Joe, at that point, we're ready for bed.
And what time is that?
That's 8:30.
And you're in bed?
Yeah.
Okay. It's an incredible, incredible. And have you, can you, you leave the order, you leave the convent for medical reasons, I presume?
We have to, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And what do you do, don't laugh at me, Fikra, what do you do for holidays?
Holidays, Joe? Why would you need a holiday? Aren't we living in paradise down here?
But I mean, I know I did a programme with the wonderful Poor Clare's once over in Ennis, and I'm still in contact with Sister Bernadine and a number of the great, great sisters there.
Yeah.
But like she was telling me once, for their little summer break, they can't, they don't leave the convent either.
No.
But the garden has, say, 5 different chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one in the sun and one in the shade. And there's kind of a little lottery to see who gets the chair for the 2 weeks. You don't do anything like that.
I'm afraid we've gone one better, isn't it awful? We have, first of all, what we call our hermit days.
Mm-hmm.
So once a month you have a day off.
Okay.
Right? Everybody else in the world gets weekends, right? But we get one day off in a month. And our only obligation on that day is to go to Mass. Other than that, the day is your own, how you spend it. But you have to stay within the confines of the 200 acres.
Okay.
All right.
You get one day off a month. There's
one day
every month you don't have to get up at 4:10.
No. Once a week you don't have to get up at 4:10.
Okay.
Right. You get a lie on. You don't have to get up till 5:30.
Okay. For Mass. Whatever. For your breakfast. For your breakfast.
For your breakfast.
Well done. Well done. And it's you know, when I say to you, it's a contented life, Fikra, and a fulfilling life. And, okay.
It's a fabulous life in so many ways, Joe, if you've got the vocation to live it.
Okay.
But every one of us here knows that but for God's grace, none of us could do it.
Well,
you know?
Fikra, just in the last 30 seconds, would you give us a little reflection on the awful, awful 15 months we had and give some consolation to people?
Well, I think the greatest consolation I can give to anybody, Joe, is that I think a lot of people have become more meditative in their own lives. That we have had time to reflect. And I find it very, very heartening to hear from people that they have decided that they don't want to go back to their former crazy life that they had before this happened. That they have thought about it and decided that, for sanity's sake, if for no other reason, that they need to make changes. And I really hope for their sakes that they do.
Okay, well said, well said.
So if you want a recommendation for anybody, it's take some time to yourself, 10 or 15 minutes a day, and just chill out.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful. Sister Fikra Nutty in Dungarvan, Glencairn Abbey. Thank you so much and God bless. Joe at rt.ie, 51551, wash hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
The job in hand was to handwrite a poem about 51551 washer hands. I don't know if I heard it first hand, second hand or third hand, but hand on hand from my soft hands who never did a hard day's work in their life, I tried to write this goodbye to 51551 washer hands, but it was out of my hands. So I hold my hands up. I did get a helping hand. I went cap in hand. I said, can you give us a hand? And I left it in their hands. And then by their own hand, they wrote, my hands are full. So they couldn't lend a hand with 51551 washer hands. I thought I could count my friends on more than one hand, but my hands were tied unless I could get all hands on deck. I got poets with time in their hands. They held my hand. And with a guiding hand, using a handbook, I have to hand it to them. We handmade this poem and hand-signed it, but it was too heavy-handed. We realised the task was out of our hands because we don't have gifted hands. Hands up or hands down. That was the hand signal that the poem, 51551 washer, hands, had got out of hand. So now I will wait hand and foot as you hand me down your handouts, your hand-printed handsome words, your golden handshake. As you tell me, we all have the whole world in our 5 and 5 masher hands. Lavez-vous les mains? Nig de lave? Vache dina handa? Lavate le mani? My life is in your hands. But it was the healing hands, the gifted hands, the holding hands, the open hands that had the whip hand. When the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, we got the upper hand. As hand in hand, we came through a pandemic, a handemic that was a handful, not from the hand of God, as we said. Get your dirty, filthy hands off of me. As it got out of hand, we didn't hold our hands, but we did 5 and 5 washer hands. And now we've more time in our hands, hands free. We will wash our hands of this pandemic, this handemic, because we can-demic. And so with a freer hand, raise a glass of clear water to every son and daughter, mother and father, uncle and aunt, siblings and friends to the end, to all those we missed and lost and loved from a distance, to the anonymous 5151s washing their hands. For the clean hands, thank you. For the healing hands, thank you. For the hands that wiped away tears, take a bow. The soon that we hoped for is now. So by a show of hands, we say goodbye to 51551, washer hands.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.